today on Annenberg Radio News.
Everybody thinks that I'm stealing from them, that I steal pounds and this and that and blah blah blah.
Find out how a cashier at a scrap metal yard deals with people who try to cheat the system. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, April 24th, 2014. I'm Bryony Ng. It's no mystery the US Post Office has been struggling since email started replacing letters, but the Postal Service's latest innovation to keep costs down has its employees riled up. They were protesting today in 27 states. Logan Healy was downtown this morning at one of the protests.
US Mail is not for sale.
Postal workers worry a partnership between the struggling U.S. Postal Service and the office supply giant Staples is going to cost them their jobs and customer privacy. This morning, as many as 100 postal worker protesters joined together outside of Staples in downtown L.A. The partnership between Staples and the U.S. Postal Service put what are basically mini post offices in more than 80 Staples stores nationwide last November. Those mini post offices are run by Staples employees, not the post office. Protesters say the partnership moves the Postal Service closer to privatization, which they say will cost middle-class jobs and threaten customers' privacy.
We understand protection and sanctity of the mail, and we are entrusted to do that.
Sabrina Maynard was at the protest and is a longtime postal worker. Postal workers take an oath to protect the mail and receive extensive training. Maynard says the Staples employees won't have the right training to handle the mail.
Well, if willy-nilly is what you want, that's most likely what you're going to get.
Congressman Xavier Becerra was at the protest. He said even he didn't know the deal with Staples was coming until it was announced.
I never got any word of this, and I think a lot of Americans never got word of this, and it scares me to my bones to believe that something as safe and secure as our mail system is now going to be farmed out.
Postmaster General Patrick Donahue said in a statement that partnerships with retail stores aren't new.
The Postal Service ended its last fiscal year with a net loss of $5 billion, the seventh consecutive year in a row for net losses. This highlights the need for us to continue to seek new growth opportunities and reduce costs, and the urgent need of Congress to pass comprehensive legislation to provide a long-term solution to our financial challenges.
The Postal Service currently partners with more than 65,000 retail locations, including Costco's and Office Depot's. But this pilot program with Staples is the first to offer traditional mail services outside of a post office. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti's budget is being evaluated by people all over the city. Today, the business group Central City Association hosted a presentation to explain the $8.1 billion budget. Lenza Bogala sat in on the meeting to get the details.
Officials gathered at the Westin Hotel in downtown Los Angeles this morning to translate Mayor Eric Garcetti's new budget plan into simple language. Rick Cole is Deputy Mayor of Budget and Innovation. He says that although the $8.1 billion plan sounds like a lot of money, it's just the right amount for a city like Los Angeles.
The overall budget is kind of a staggering number, which represents a huge city, 4 million people, and a wide range of services.
Cole says Mayor Garcetti's plan focuses on getting back to the basics. He broke it down into 3 points: getting results, building the city's reserves, and preparing for the future.
It's not enough to just balance a budget for 1 year. You want to have a healthy government that's going to be able to provide reliable, quality services over a long period of time.
Cole says that is especially important.
When you get into trouble, it's because you haven't managed your finances well to go through tough times. Our goal is to do that so that the next time we have tough times, whether it's a natural disaster or whether it's a recession, we will be prepared.
The budget also proposes to extend library hours, hire more law enforcement, and spend $161 million on paving the most number of roads in LA's history. But some people are skeptical when it comes to how to pay for all that. One controversial issue not addressed during the presentation was Garcetti's proposal to hire 50 more parking enforcement officers. Critics say it's just a way to generate more revenue. but supporters like the president and CEO of the Central City Association, Carol Schatz, says she has faith in the budget's straightforward approach.
His budget is focused on back to basics, so making sure that city government is efficient and provides basic services to residents and businesses.
The Los Angeles City Council must approve the budget plan first before it takes effect on July 1st. Budget hearings are scheduled to start on April 29th. Lenza Bogale, Annenberg Radio News.
The Banc of California is getting a bigger footprint in Southern California. It's taking over 41 branches of Banco Popular, Puerto Rico's largest bank. Former Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa serves as Banc of California's strategic advisor. He said today that lending practices will expand to help those in need.
They'll provide us a footprint in a part of LA County and northern Orange County that we think will enhance opportunities for people who want to build their businesses, people who want to own homes.
Before the acquisition, Banc of California had already acquired 20 banks throughout Southern California. With Banco Popular's branches, it will become the largest bank in Orange County. Armenians are commemorating a tragedy within their community today. 99 years ago, as the Ottoman Empire collapsed, about 1.5 million Armenians were killed. Armenians call the violence a genocide. The Turkish government still refuses to recognize it as such. Southern California is home to the largest Armenian community in the U.S. Several events are taking place in the commemoration of the genocide. Ani Yukar is at the Turkish consulate, and she joins us now live to tell us what's going on. Hi, Ani. Tell us where you are right now.
Hi, Rani. I don't know if you can hear me. It's getting pretty hectic out here. I'm outside the Turkish consulate on Bolster Boulevard, and there's hundreds and hundreds of protesters coming out here to remember the 99th anniversary of the Armenian genocide. Police officers are lining up, and it's getting pretty rowdy.
See, how many people are there?
They have high energy. They seem to be ready to camp out all night. This is a 24-hour call to action. So they seem ready and, you know, willing to do whatever it takes to get their voices heard. As you can hear, they're yelling and screaming and chanting. They're all very passionate about this. Hundreds of people just keep swarming the area. Banners, everything.
Okay, thanks very
much.
Yeah, I can. That's great. Thanks very much, Ani, for joining us. It's great to hear you.
Okay, thanks, Brady.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Later tonight, the city of Glendale will hold a commemorative event at the Alex Theatre on Brand Boulevard. The event will showcase traditional Armenian music and dance. It begins at 7 p.m. Prepare for cooler weather this weekend. We'll have some clouds and highs in the 60s, but temperatures will rise again early next week, with highs in the 80s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, hear how learning lessons from history could help reduce America's debt. Now we continue our series looking at the people who make Los Angeles run, the night shift workers, the minimum wage employees, and the undocumented laborers. In the 10th part of our series, Denise Guerra takes us to the scrapyard. Some people earn a lot of money recycling metal, but as we find out, where there's money, there are also disputes.
Lily Alfonso is a cashier at USA Recycle and Metal Yard. The mother of two is 30, but looks much younger. Wearing a tight white shirt and jeans, she peers out through dirty windows, partially shielded by black solid steel metal bars. Like a bank, it protects the cash she keeps inside. Beyond the window is a mountain of smoke and metal, a wasteland guarded by a three-story yellow crane, constantly smashing the debris with its giant claws. The constant pounding, that she can handle. But certain customers are driving her batty. Today, it's three brothers who have a history of cheating the scrap metal and recycling center by increasing the weight of the metal they find. Lily calls them the Monsos.
I've never met people like this, never, like in my entire life. Like a washing machine or something, full of rocks, full of sand. We have to, I usually, you know, I have the guys that are seeing what they're throwing, right? So they come and tell me, hey, this guy threw a lot of trash. So when they come here, I have to deduct like maybe 200 to 300 pounds. And he just goes off on me. And he goes off and off and off.
Lily uses an intercom system to call Angel outside.
Angel, you check if this guy can throw any trash. Anything, you let me know.
Angel is a small, quiet man with gloves and a large gardening hat. He's handling the scales and checking the Monsos' latest find, a refrigerator for anything extra. He signals there's no cheating. The weight from the scales outside show up on Lily's computer, and she multiplies that number with the list of the metal's going rate for the day. It's a small scrap shop in a sea of a global commodities market whose number one customer is China. Unfortunately, because China's economy has stagnated, so has the metals market. And Lily's customers are feeling the effects.
Everybody thinks that I'm stealing from them, that I steal pounds and this and that and blah, blah, blah. So it's just drama, only drama.
Today, the assortment of rods, chairs, and refrigerator bring in a hefty profit because metals like aluminum, copper, and nickel are the creme de la creme of scrap metal. Those are the metals that China wants to make all the stuff we buy. And today, these metals are going for roughly 60 cents a pound. And the Monsos have truckloads of it, to the tune of $240. But the Monsos want $20 more. And they're not checking the current events or commodity prices. They just know they got more before. And they won't budge unless Lily calls her manager and cousin, Alex.
Alex. Hey, Alex, vamos a...
From outside the office window, one of the Monsos call out to Alex on the phone. And Alex agrees to $20 more.
And this is tax-free. They're not able to report taxes, so they have more money than you and I together, I think.
Making this kind of money is usually reserved for the super scrappers, where scrapping is an actual job. And only a few of Lily's customers have reached the level of scrapping the Monsos have. Most, if not all, use scrapping as a supplemental form of income and only make less than $10 per visit. From the looks of it, anything can be scrapped for money. Glass bottles, cars, ovens, and spools of electric wires thrown across the yard. And the man in charge of organizing the yard is none other than Leo Dominguez and his rather excited companion.
Yeah, that's my bodyguard.
Oh, really? What's his name?
Spanky.
As Spanky looks on, Leo's directing a large flatbed truck. On top of the truck is a trailer the size of a small bus. Jose Pedrosa is the driver.
So my part in this whole thing is just getting the product from where it was purchased to the recycling plant.
A peddler hired Jose to bring the container here.
The prices that are being paid for steel and aluminum are at a very low point. And that's making it hard for peddlers to make a living.
The crane's metal claw starts pounding through the container. And within minutes, it's obliterated into pieces, prepped for a journey across land and sea to China. In the process, the shiny stuff will be melted, broken, and reshaped into new things. New things that will eventually become old things as offerings for Lily. Denise Guerra, Annenberg Radio News.
A memorial to pay honor and respect to the victims of the Korean ferry disaster took place in Koreatown today. JJ Maldonado visits the memorial where the smell of incense and flower arrangements decorated the doorway.
On a table in the entryway, an incense burns to honor those died in the Korean ferry tragedy. Ann Park, president of the Korean Prosecutors Association, says the messaging center is trying to spread the word for everyone to share their condolences and to offer support to families of the victims.
I'm sure the leaders in the city of LA and LA County, if they knew about it, they would come out and support. So we're trying to spread the word.
The Memorial Message Center opened up today at the Korean American Federation of LA.
This particular messaging center event will go on until end of next week, next Friday.
Residents can also write on yellow cards to send messages to the victims and their families. You can also pick up a memorial ribbon to wear until we find out exactly what happened. Park says it's especially important to find out why the ferry capsized.
If they had any signs of warning that the ship was not seaworthy, then what should have been done or could have been done and was not done, obviously. So that needs to be really examined carefully so that we'll learn from this and not have to repeat this type of tragedy in the future.
The tragedy has taken nearly 200 lives, while over 100 people remain missing. JJ Maldonado, Annenberg Radio News.
Former Mayor of Houston Bill White came to USC to talk about America's debt and how the country could learn from its own history. The U.S. government is currently in about $17.5 trillion worth of debt. I had the chance to ask White how he thinks the government should start the massive task of reducing it. Hi, Bill. Welcome to ARN. Great to have you on the show today.
It's great to be with you.
You've come here today to talk about your book called America's Fiscal Constitution, Its Triumph and Its Collapse. Can you tell us why you wrote this book?
I wanted to give a roadmap for people who were interested in doing something to balance a budget. And I also wanted to emphasize to people, especially many young people, that for most of the country's history, the vast majority of people believed that we ought to have revenues that covered the ordinary expenditures of government, so that we wouldn't mortgage the future of the country.
Who were the fiscal heroes of America's past, and what can we learn from them?
The one that a lot of people look back to and that is celebrated by both liberals and conservatives today is Thomas Jefferson. He was a populist. He believed in upward mobility, but he believed that there are limits to what the government could do effectively and that the government should live within its means. If people were unwilling to pay taxes to support some public program, then you shouldn't do it.
So why have things changed? What specifically happened in 2001 and since then to change that way of managing the country?
Well, the change occurred fairly abruptly and quietly. Since 2001, there have been two uses of debt, which were consistent with the traditions of American history and our values. But then when debt was used to fund a war on terrorism, and then the occupation of two countries. Civilians weren't asked to sacrifice to pay higher taxes to support those efforts. That was something new and unusual in the history of the country. And it was new and unusual in 2003 when Medicare was expanded to cover prescription drugs, and they did it without providing a source of payment for that program. So it was funded using debt. And that, again, was unprecedented.
Where does the government even start to get itself out of this enormous debt?
Well, you know, I have some practical sort of steps, which are lessons from history. One that is very straightforward is that if people in Congress vote to spend money that will be financed with debt, they vote then and there for the amount of debt to be incurred for that specific purpose. The other thing we ought to do is we ought to have a source of funding to sustain Medicare.
Do you think the government is likely to be able to make those changes to reduce the debt and to stop borrowing?
I think it requires, you know, people who get active in politics to make this a voting issue for them. Too often our candidates pretend as though everything is obvious and there's no disadvantages to the course of actions that they recommend. And we need fewer salesmen and more people who use straight talk.
What do you hope your readers will take away from your book?
They ought to be alarmed about the debt, and they ought to be hopeful that there's a lot of Americans who think the same way they do, and they get politically active. And if they hear a candidate who seems to be straight talk about this issue, support that candidate. If there's anybody who listens to this show who's worried about the climate change and its impact, or who believes that we ought to improve public education so people have more opportunities 10, 20, 30 years down the road, if you share those values, you ought to be worried about debt. Don't sit on the sidelines, though, because your future is at stake.
Bill White, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
A new partnership between USC's Thornton School of Music and the Grammy Museum debuted today. Jenna Pittaway tells us why and what it means for students.
Oh, I don't want to put you in my library with those old...
USC's senior Brett Fromson played his song In My Library at the announcement ceremony on campus today.
Where the dust belongs.
Robert Cudietta, the dean of the School of Music, says the partnership will benefit students by opening up the museum's resources to students and faculty.
We have access to their entire network of approved historians, professionals to come and to speak internship programs for students. I think that will be a wonderful example of how we can work together.
USC is the first university to partner with the museum, but museum director Bob Santelli says he has big plans for the future.
The opportunities are going to be terrific as we build this extended family.
Santelli plans to visit Delta State University in Mississippi and envisions being able to send Thornton students there to study blues. The students are equally excited about the possibilities. Pop music majors Katie Skeen and Max Khaleesi say they've already had great experiences with the museum.
They've had us do performances and showcases over at their Grammy Museum Theater before, which has been really cool because it's a really great venue.
I know we've had like a bunch of guests come into Forum and talk to us, so that would be awesome to have more people, and they give us really cool insights.
USC was a natural fit as the museum's first partner because the museum is so close to campus. The Grammy Museum plans to announce additional university partners throughout 2014. Jenna Pittaway, Annenberg Radio News.
I want to weather the winter with you. I don't want to put you away.
In Los Angeles, we hear a lot about movie stars and TV celebrities, but there are many kinds of other actors. John DeMita is a professional actor who you can see on stage in theaters, hear his voice in anime cartoons, and even learn from him in a class at USC. Michaela Wickham sat down with DeMita, who is her professor, to talk about his experiences as a performer.
What was your first reaction, emotional reaction, to your first experience with acting?
I was tremendously excited. I played a prince in a show in elementary school, and I remember very much how much positive attention I got from other people and how thrilling it was for me to be creative in that way. It just felt unique to me.
You give me an example of some of your vocal warm-ups?
I would be happy to. I do a lot of speech warm-ups, mostly for the articulation. First myself, I will roll my tongue. So I say, wee, wah, one goes side to side, the other one goes big, and then bring in the letter L. Will you, William, will you, William, will you, William, will you, William. Some tongue twisters like unique New York, unique New York, unique New York, unique New York, red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. Or toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat.
And what is the play that you're in right now, and what's your character like? I know you have a big monologue in that.
I have more than one. The play is called The Petrified Forest. It was written by Robert Sherwood. It was written in 1934, and it takes place in a diner in Arizona where a bunch of distinctive types of people, an intellectual, a rich couple, a working class waitress, they're all held hostage by a gangster who's on the run from the law. So it's kind of corny in that way, but the ideas of the play and the speeches, as you mentioned, are extremely interesting, and they're very, very particular to America in the 1930s. So it's really interesting.
And so how do you handle doing these huge monologues? I mean, how do you keep it fresh? How do you prepare for that? What is that like?
Well, the way to prepare is to learn the words before you do anything else. That way you know that your brain and your mouth will not betray you. You will not lose your way. By the time, hopefully, you get in front of an audience, you have the technical ability to say the words clearly, but then you have the freedom to explore emotionally what the character says to you personally. And that's been really rewarding.
And so you have experience in theater, but also in voice acting. What is that like?
I love the fact that you can be anybody as a voice actor, whereas as a physical actor, you're restricted to your gender, your age. As a voice actor, I do cartoon series where I play aliens. I play characters from other cultures, Japanese cartoons. I do a lot of those. So there's a limitless possibility to what you can do.
How do you generate those accents or something for an alien? What is that experience like?
You make them up as you go, and you base them on what you know from English or from American culture or from European culture. I mean, I'm good at dialects because I have a good ear for music. When with aliens, you're not limited to anything so predictable, but basically you're singing notes in a song and you just make up new notes.
So my last question, when you experience acting, whether you are acting yourself or seeing students who are acting, what are five adjectives that kind of come to mind when you see great acting?
Passion. Curiosity, freedom, clarity, intention.
Great. Well, thank you so much, John, for sitting down with me and sharing your experiences.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
...that's being created. Now pressure turns that organic material into oil. So that oil is what's seeping up to the surface, and that's what animals were getting stuck in. Asphalt seeps.
We're at the La Brea Tar Pits. It's really stinky and bubbly and...
Gives you a very different
in the movies, yeah, I saw it in a volcano movie, I think it was called. Volcano? I saw it in that.
Well, all the tar pits are really gunky and sticky, really sticky, and also... Millions of animals years ago sunk in there, so this is what it looks like in real life.
Sonic City!
Now we check in with Ashley Regal to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, thanks so much. We've got lots of great stories tonight. First of all, e-cigarette shop owners say parents are the ones to blame when underage kids get their hands on this nicotine fix. We'll show you why the opinion is prompting major reactions. Plus, we'll look inside Facebook's new app for journalists. Tune in tonight to ATVN at 6 on TrojanVision.com.
Thanks, Ashley. President Obama played soccer in Japan today, but probably with no one, or should I say nothing, you've seen before. At Japan's National Museum of Emerging Science and Innovation, Honda's humanoid robot, which is about the height of a 10-year-old, kicked a soccer ball to the president.
Oh! Wow! He's moving.
I can kick a soccer ball, too.
Okay. Good job.
And while Obama found the feat impressive, he also thought the moment was a little scary because of the robot's lifelike movement. Obama is in Japan today as part of his four-country Asia tour. Next on the trip is South Korea. If you're planning on riding LA Metro trains, you can probably expect some delays. A man was killed after jumping in front of a train at the Civic Center station downtown at around 1:30. The death is being investigated as a suicide. Red and purple lines are delayed. Meanwhile, in Pasadena, a big rig crashed through the center median on the 210 freeway. The truck struck one of the Gold Line's power poles. Gold Line trains are stopping at Lake Avenue, and shuttle buses will carry riders for the rest of the route. That's it for this Thursday. Remember to visit our website, annenbergradio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles. Today, we'll have a story from Andy Vasoyan about the revival of vinyl records. And follow us on Twitter at Annenberg Radio. We had help today from Sarah Zahedi. Our production assistant is Lexi Macavinci. The newscast producer is Victor Figueroa. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Bryony Ng.